taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to All My Best Friends Are Digital, a podcast about video games and the stories they tell. With me is my favorite storyteller, Caitlin Bailey. How are you doing, Caitlin?
I'm doing great. How about you, Mark?
I am doing splendidly. Thank you so much. And I just want to emphasize once again, we're not going to try to rattle on about this too much. Self-promotion is ooky to us. But if you would like to support us and get ad-free versions of all our episodes and tons of great bonus content besides, you can find us on Patreon. We just started it recently. We're already blown away with the level of support. Thank you so, so much, everybody who has considered contributing. At patreon.com/ambfad, that's A-M-B-F-A-D. I love me my clumsy acronyms. At any rate, with that in mind, let us proceed on to the non-mercenary portion of the show, Caitlin.
Yes.
So we are going to talk about what we've been playing lately. We're going to be talking about our retro game, The Lion King, in our segment Goof, Gaming Opinions on Old School Funware. We're going to talk about our feature game this week, which is Animal Well. And then finally, we were going to engage in some shameless hyping of upcoming titles in Shout. So, Caitlin, what have you been up to lately?
All right. So, I've been playing a couple different games, but the game I'm going to talk about today is Power Wash Simulator. So, I first picked it up when it came out. It came out in July of 2022, and I played through most of the stories, I guess 75% of it, solo. I had just accepted a new job. I'd been... I worked for a UK company for a little while, and they did this thing where they like kind of laid people off, but kind of didn't. Anyway, suffice to say, I'd accepted a new job. I wasn't working at the old one. I had a month off of work. It was glorious. I power washed so much. but anyway, then it was like a really nice way to chill and just turn my brain off and not think about anything. So actually, it would probably make a really good podcast game, although I don't think Power Wash Simulator is for everyone, but that's okay. Anyway, moving on. I didn't touch it for like 2 years after I started my new job, but they've put out a ton of free TLC, and a couple of my friends I found out were playing co-op, and I was like, I also want to do that. So we played co-op for a few hours yesterday. We did like, they released a Final Fantasy VII DLC pack for free.
Oh my goodness, what do you power wash in the Final Fantasy VII DLC pack?
So there's a bunch of levels. I don't know what all of them are, but the one that we did was the Seventh Heaven bar. So Tifa's bar in the Midgar slums. So that was cool.
Okay, I recognized some of those words. Keep in mind, as you're talking, I'm just storing up more and more questions because you're blowing my mind with every sentence. But the Final Fantasy VII free DLC, I had to interject. I apologize. Please do continue.
Yes. That's quite all right. Then we also did this garden maze from Lara Croft's Tomb Raider Mansion. So there's Tomb Raider DLC. And then I also picked up the Shrek DLC. The Shrek DLC was paid. The other ones were not. And we did the Fairy Godmother's Potion Factory. So it was fun. I mean, we just got to chat about random crap while we power wash things. Like, I don't know. It was a good, very chill time.
I don't know where to begin. First of all, I was thinking when you said that there's a whole bunch of DLC, as a joke, I was going to say, are there any giant robot DLC? But now I would not be half surprised to hear that there's some sort of Gundam DLC in there where you power wash a giant robot. Is there?
So I don't think there's Gundam. There is Warhammer, I believe, but I'm not sure what the content is that they have for Warhammer. Also, I'm not very familiar with Warhammer. I know there's a lot of vehicles, apparently, that you can clean.
Well, that seems pretty reasonable. I would imagine that the combat vehicles in Warhammer can get pretty dirty, what with all the agents of chaos that they have to deal with.
Yes.
I'm not a huge fan of the Warhammer universe. Despite the fact that I'm involved in tabletop miniatures gaming, Warhammer isn't my jam, but that does seem like a pretty natural fit, especially given the volume of players who know Warhammer exclusively through the video game content.
Yes.
So, what other kind of DLC do they have?
Well, they have Alice in Wonderland, which is paid DLC. They also have SpongeBob SquarePants paid DLC.
Hold up. How does that make any sense? How do you power wash something in the SpongeBob SquarePants universe?
I don't know. I haven't played that one. It's all underwater. I don't know.
I'm beginning to question the simulationist cred of this power wash simulator.
I mean, the main game, you're power washing like actual real life items. But yeah, the DLC is all wild.
I played a very small bit of Power Wash Simulator because it was up on Game Pass and it was a very buzzy game. Everyone was talking about it. And yeah. There's just an entire range of games that are clearly not simulators that have the term simulator attached to them. You know, there's Goat Simulator, there's Surgeon Simulator, there's all these other kinds of things. And mm-hmm. It's always tough to tell what kind of joke they're telling, because they're all telling some kind of joke. No, I mean this, but the joke that Goat Simulator is telling is very different from the joke that Surgeon Simulator is telling, which in turn is very different from the kind of joke that Power Wash Simulator is telling. And so I played a couple of levels. You know, level one is power wash the van that you just bought for your power wash business. Very apropos. I personally, though, found it very frustrating. I found it somewhat frustrating in that for a while you're going and you're washing things and it's great. You get that semi-visceral satisfaction you get from cleaning something that's very dirty. And you see those very, very clear lines. And indeed, apparently using a power washer is very much like that. I've seen people enthusiastically show me pictures of, you know, after the first swipe of the power wash, you get to see the before and after right next to each other in these stark lines.
Yeah.
But after that's done, it's telling me, okay, you've washed 97% of the van. In order to clear the mission, you need to clean 98% of the van. And here I'm looking at this van, I'm like, it's clean. Oh, that little bit of tire is dirty. Okay.
Yeah. Vehicles are BS, by the way. I hate them. Meaning cleaning them.
So this is not representative of all the levels then?
I don't think so. I find vehicles in particular to be really, really tricky because there's a lot of like, especially the tires. I don't know. I hate tires because they got the treads and then they have like the stuff in the middle. I don't know. I don't know words. Yeah, the stuff in the middle. Vehicles are terrible. Other items tend to be a lot less frustrating. That's not to say that there aren't frustrating bits of most of the levels, though. Like, I mean, even on the Seventh Heaven one, there was these little like kind of iron looking lamps, like wall lamps, and you would just be running the power washer over it, and it says that there's just a little tiny bit of dirt somewhere.
Right.
But you can't see it when you hit the show me the dirt button. So, yeah, the game does that to you sometimes. But playing with another person also really helped because, like, the two of us could both just point our power washers at the same thing, and eventually it would, you know, the tiny little speck of dirt would be magically cleaned up.
So I assume, very much like some of the other co-op games that you've been playing, like Core Keeper, it's just that you're in a shared level, go to town, you're both washing the same thing.
Yeah.
Can you accidentally injure your other person by power washing them?
No, there's no injuries, no hit points. If somebody is spraying their power washer at you, your character will vibrate a little bit.
Okay.
Which I guess is fair.
I could then just imagine what it would be to be a power wash simulator griefer online.
Oh, no. That would be real sad.
Are there horses to power wash?
There are no horses.
Oh, that seems like an oversight. Number one, horses get very dirty. Number two, people like horses.
So it's possible that there's like a statue of a horse somewhere, but not any of the levels that I ended up playing.
At the point where you're willing to abandon verisimilitude to the point that you're going to Wonderland, that you're power washing things under the ocean, that you're power washing things in Midgard of Final Fantasy VII, I think they should give people what they want and have some horses to power wash.
Yeah, we can send that feedback into them, see what they say.
Give them that note. Or at the very least, to tell you what, we can compromise. How about mounted power washers?
Mounted power washers. Okay. So you ride on a horse. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like it.
Why are you looking at me like I'm crazy? You're the one talking about power washing things in Bikini Bottom.
You're not wrong.
I did not invent this game. I am just trying to riff on the vibe that it is already putting out. So is there more stuff that you're looking forward to power washing? Or was this just sort of a trip through memory lane in a sort of way?
I'll probably play with friends again, because that was fun. So one of the reasons that I eventually kind of bounced off this game is some of the levels can get very long, and I do occasionally suffer from motion sickness, and this game really did me in the first few times I played it. I've since learned some strategies to not become motion sick. One of them is you can change your aiming mode. So the default aiming mode, when you move your mouse, it moves your whole camera. So you can change to a different aiming mode where your camera won't move unless you move your mouse like all the way to the edge of your screen. That helps a ton. That was like a main thing I needed to do. And then there's also field of view settings that you can adjust as well. Yeah, the first few times it was pretty rough.
That was going to be my other question, because you mentioned a few weeks ago about your struggles with motion sickness, and you mentioned Power Wash Simulator in particular. But yeah, decoupling the center of your field of view from the reticle, I imagine, goes a long way towards resolving that.
Yes, that was huge. If they hadn't had that, I don't think I could have played it at all.
Well, I could certainly understand why other games wouldn't be able to do that particular fix, but it does seem like an excellent salutary modification.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Caitlin, when and if you can power wash a giant bipedal robot in Power Wash Simulator, I'll give it another try.
Awesome. I'll definitely let you know.
I would even be willing to do it on a Gundam, even though Gundams aren't really my thing.
What kind of giant robot is your thing?
Anything from Macross.
Okay.
Any Valkyrie, any Destroid, anything from there will be fine. Hell, I'd even power wash the interior or exterior of any one of the capital class ships. Maybe even an armed platform. I mean, whatever. I'm flexible.
Okay. Sounds good. Mark, what have you been up to lately?
Caitlin, I have a bit of a story. But before I get into the bit of a story, I'm going to do a quick follow-up on Inscryption. I talked about Inscryption recently, the spooky kind of escape room card thing. And I was contacted by a number of different listeners, among them your husband.
Yep.
Who, I knew the Inscryption fan base was passionate, and I knew it was deep. But I wasn't expecting quite the volume of reaction that I got from talking about Inscryption. The overall tone was, I will say this, I've gotten pushback from many different kinds of fan bases over the course of my life. Like, who knows? Maybe as a result of my comments already in this episode, I'm going to have Warhammer and or Gundam stands crawling out of the woodwork to tell me that I'm a degenerate. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's possible. But generally, when fans show up on the internet, it's unfortunate but true, the reaction is mostly toxic and defensive. I will say this about the Inscryption fan base. They're very positive. They're very pro-Inscryption. They're not really here to tell me that I'm wrong for not appreciating the puzzle-like elements. They're all like, no, you don't understand. Look, it's so good. Where are you? Okay, I could get you to the next stage. You don't even know. Trust me, it's so good. And I'm broadly sympathetic. It's definitely a vote in Inscryption's favor, how the game kind of evolves. I have played a little bit more. I've solved a couple of things that are demonstrably puzzles. It didn't seem to substantially change the game. Some people assert that the fundamental card gameplay kind of sort of evolves and morphs as various other meta elements of Inscryption are unlocked. And it's not like I'm blind to the meta progression. There has been meta progression. Mm-hmm. And it like things are going on that I kind of understand. I picked up a new figurine and I put it in a thing and it dislodged another thing and then another thing happened. And I'm able to make these connections. I'm not totally at sea.
Yeah.
So there's that. Like, the sheer enthusiasm was a little bit infectious, so I have played a little bit more Inscryption. I don't know if the overall experience is going to be one where getting spoilers to try to get me to the next few chapters is necessarily what I'm interested in doing. But the mere fact that I've had a number of people volunteer to shepherd me through has been impressive. So
that's beautiful.
Follow up on Inscryption. Also follow up on R Rootage. I've been playing a lot of R Rootage, the Kenta Cho ABBA games, freely available shoot 'em up that's a boss rush with a whole bunch of different mechanisms and mechanics from other shoot 'em up games. So there's this platform called Portmaster. And Portmaster is basically a collection of install scripts for PC games that allow you to run them on handheld devices. So some recent games that are very, very mainstream and popular that allow you to run them on handhelds are things like Balatro or Stardew Valley or TMNT Shredder's Revenge. So that anybody who's familiar with the handheld emulation sphere knows that for $50, you can get a pretty good machine that will, generally speaking, emulate well past Super Nintendo and Genesis and PlayStation, and sometimes even in the lower ends of Dreamcast and PlayStation Portable and N64. And through Portmaster, they can also play a whole bunch of other PC games, like the aforementioned ports. And I started thinking, well, okay, well, there's no good reason why our rootage can't have been ported through Portmaster. Let me see if there's a Portmaster port available. There wasn't, but there was a Portmaster port for another one of Kenta Cho's games, A7XPG. And I figured, hey, whatever, don't ask, you don't get, right? And I contacted the developer of the A7XPG port, a person by the name of Sebion, and I just said, look, I saw that you ported A7XPG. Are you interested in porting any other stuff by Kenta Cho? And they said, well, I don't know. Is it open source? Does it use any of the other libraries? I'm like, no, it's open source and it doesn't use any other libraries. Here's what it is. And they said, okay, well, I'll edit. Let's see what's what. 12 hours later, Caitlin, there was a port of our rootage through Portmaster. And I, for one, am thrilled. And I'm especially thrilled because there's a lot of ports in Portmaster that are finicky. They require a very specific set of installation steps, and even then they might not necessarily work. So let me talk a little bit about the things that are available on Portmaster. And I've been playing these on my 40XXV, which, for what it's worth, I think is one of the best-looking handheld emulation devices of the past year. It's very pretty. I think it's very sleek and very neat-looking. And so this is the Anbernic 40XXV. I endorse to varying extent everything in the XX line. I think it's very good, with the exception of the 35XX2024. That thing is a piece of garbage and should not exist. But anyway, so I've been playing R-Rootage. Tons of R-Rootage. There's a Risk of Rain port on Portmaster. I've been playing the crap out of that. And you might be thinking, oh, but Mark, this is a 4-inch screen and Risk of Rain was already pretty small. Is it playable? Yes, it's surprisingly playable. Is it great for my aged eyes? Not necessarily. Does it have tremendous slowdown on some levels, particularly when you get into the cremator, lobbing dozens of projectiles at you? Oh, yes, the slowdown is real. Am I still perfectly willing to play it? Absolutely. I've sunk so many hours into Risk of Rain, and I've done a couple full runs on a tiny little handheld device. It's glorious. And I'm not necessarily going to defend a series of rhetorical questions, but nonetheless, it is a form of dialogue into which I lapse. My sincerest apologies. Do I regret it? Yes. Am I going to keep doing it? Probably. See, there you go. On top of that, this has caused me to start investigating other commercially available PC games that are light indie games that have Portmaster ports. Because all things being equal, if I'm going to drop $5 on an indie game that can only play on my PC and my handheld PCs and my other portable Windows devices versus one that will also let me play on any number of the very inexpensive emulation devices that I have that I can easily throw into my purse, I will absolutely prefer the latter. And so I started looking through my Steam wishlist and kind of cross-referencing it with the available ports. And I saw that there was a game called Bleed. Bleed is an action platformer that kind of borrows some elements of twin-stick shooters. I love twin-stick shooters. So the original Helldivers, for example, was a relatively modern twin-stick shooter design. The Helldivers 2 is a third-person shooter, which is a different thing entirely. Assault Android Cactus is another great recent twin-stick shooter. Bleed is a much more indie style, so it's just sort of 16-bit artwork. And it's got platforming elements. So you've got the twin sticks, you've got a jump button, you've got a slowdown button. That's more or less it. It doesn't even have a fire button. You just fire automatically as you aim. And if you'll remember from my campaigns previous games, if you're going to make a frenetic action game, all things being equal, I don't want you to go to town on my having to be able to manipulate, say, 7 to 8 buttons at any given moment in order to maximally utilize my toys. And Bleed, I think, is very, very good in terms of the balance. Twin stick shooters often are, because when it's a twin stick shooter, generally speaking, you can only reliably use 4 of the buttons at any given time, and generally only 2 at once. And that's generally a speed that I can appreciate. So I'm a couple levels into Bleed. I think it's great. It's very well done. The aesthetic is very retro. The twin stick goodness is very much there. It's got a focus on playing around with different kinds of weapons, but not overwhelming you with a whole bunch of options at any given time. So you can unlock new stuff and figure out what's your favorite, but you're not going to be having a huge arsenal all at once. And the platforming is pretty good, and the way it involves precision shooting at the same time as dodging at the same time as platforming, I think is extraordinarily well done. It's a good balance. The sequel apparently has a whole bunch more features, but the sequel was the unpardonable price of like $8 rather than $5. And so I figure I'll start with the first one and play that later. I'm joking, of course. $8 is definitely a reasonable price, and I'll probably end up getting it. Because guess what, Caitlin? There's a port for Bleed 2 as well on Portmasters.
Nice. Yes.
And I should also note that, just as for reference, because Portmaster is so fiddly and very particular about how things are installed and file formats and structures, it is very much for tinkerers. Very little of it is plug and play. There are some openly available ports on Portmaster that are not ports of Steam games. For example, Abuse or the Urquan Masters, two great games from the 90s. Abuse was a very original kind of twin-stick shooter platformer thing. And the aesthetic is directly ripped out of Alien vs. Predator. But I played it in the 90s, and it's one of the perennially freely available ports on Portmaster. And I've never had a problem getting it to run on any device, unlike a lot of others. So I would encourage people to try it out. You know, start with Abuse, start with other things before you get into the more complicated stuff like Balatro or Stardew Valley or things of that nature, where you're downloading Linux distros off of the Steam console and you have to put them in the right directory structure and run the install script properly, etc., etc. And I also want to give a shout out to Alice in Mansonland on YouTube, who, when he heard that I was having difficulty getting Bleed to run properly, went to the bother of making an entire video just to show me what the directory structure of the folder was supposed to look like, and that clued me into how to get it to work properly. So thank you very, very much for that. That was great.
Nice.
So yeah, it's a tremendous community, obviously, right? Sebian made me a port because I asked for one. And other people, when they found out that I had trouble, were helping me on the Discord and making videos for me. It's a marvelous place to be. It's a great community. And Portmaster lets you play all kinds of great stuff, even stuff for free, on your cheap emulation handheld devices. And so I've been a big fan, but I've been playing a lot of Bleed, a lot of R Rootage, and a lot of Risk of Rain on my sundry handheld toys. So that is what I have been up to lately, with, of course, the aforementioned thanks to another great community, the community of Inscription Stands. I see you, I hear you, I respect you, and I love you. I'm just not there where you are. It's okay. I've got nothing against where you are. I'm just saying that I'm over here and you're over there.
So I do have a question about Portmaster.
Shoot.
Less about Portmaster and more about you and Portmaster. I'm just curious. Is it just because you enjoy playing on the handhelds? Are you more comfortable? Do you not like sitting in front of your computer to play stuff? Like, I'm just curious. Like, what drove you to Portmaster?
Two things. One of them is I am cognizant of the fact that sitting in my office in the same place for too long at a time is a great way to feel stuck and or get into a rut. And number two, I just enjoy the physicality of these other toys. It really is just a new kind of object and a new kind of structure and a new way to appreciate this kind of media. And so this is related to another question I get all the time, which is, Mark, I could possibly understand having, let's be charitable and say, two different kinds of handheld toy doohickeys. Why do you have, and then they gesture towards some vast expanse, and I'm not going to get into a number because I couldn't even begin to estimate how many I have, but answer I tell them is the same. It's like, look, it's kind of like how driving a different car gives a different experience, kind of like how different televisions or different screens or different projection methods have a different kind of color temperature and a different way to experience it. Or it could just be just as simple as trying it a different chair or things of that nature. The physicality provides a new way to appreciate the medium, and I just like the toy factor of these various devices. It's like trying out different controllers to that extent as well. And so a little bit of variety, a little bit of mobility, a little bit of change of scene in society, that is what I appreciate. And if nothing else, another virtue of having these things is they are so quick to boot up when compared to even something like a Steam Deck, which is not a Windows-based device, but it is nonetheless a PC-equivalent device. These Linux-based devices, you can have architectures where they boot up in seconds and they have battery lives of like 6 to 8 hours, no problem. And so that makes them much, much more travel-friendly. And so even when I'm at home, there are reasons, but when leaving home, which I try to avoid whenever possible, but when I'm forced to do so, it's good to have these options available. And so it just makes me happy for all those reasons.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you.
No problem, Caitlin. So that's what we've been up to lately. Let us now proceed to some gaming opinions on old school funware. Yes, I realize that much of what I said is already under that category, but whatever, I have retro gaming on the brain much of the time. Caitlin, why don't you tell us what our retro game was this week, and I will accept your apologies.
All right, so this week we played The Lion King. It was released in 1994, developed by Westwood Studios and published by Virgin Interactive Entertainment. I believe back in the day it came out on the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis, and now there's a zillion ports to a bunch of places, including, I believe, Android. But anyway, so my notes, one third of my notes are in all caps because I was real mad when I wrote them. That roughly sums up this game.
Caitlin, when I think about life's worries and when I think about the challenges I face, I try to think of a phrase that can put me at ease. And so I think of a pleasing rice-based citrus beverage, Satsuma Horchata. It's a wonderful phrase. Wait, no, I don't think that's quite right. Anyway, go on.
No, not quite there. So, The Lion King was a big part of my childhood. The year it came out, it was my birthday party for my twin sister and I was seeing The Lion King in theaters. When the game came out, it was an instant hit in our household. We would play it, quote unquote, multiplayer, because there is no multiplayer. And multiplayer back in the day would mean that we would just trade controllers when we died. And so because of that, I got very good at this game, to the point where I could play through the entire thing on a single life. I was not aware until fairly recently the reputation that The Lion King had for being extremely difficult. So, whoops.
It's almost as difficult as flying from Pennsylvania to the Congo, which is a route that is known as Altoona Kinshasa. What a wonderful phrase.
How many of these did you come up with ahead of time?
Maybe only two more.
Okay, maybe. So yeah, I can't do that anymore. I have a tiny bit of muscle memory still there, but it's mostly gone. The first two lines of notes that I have are in all caps. If I somehow manage to hit down while running forward to jump and I roll off something again, I'm gonna lose it. That was written while on level 2, I Just Can't Wait to Be King, when I was trying to jump from giraffe head to giraffe head. And somehow I kept hitting down while attempting to jump, and I would just roll off the giraffe into the water and instantly die. Level 2 is some BS. Anyway, sorry. Okay, I'm getting a little off track here.
Let me express my support before you do. Level 2 is garbage. It is straight garbage.
Straight garbage. So I lost my very first playthrough in level 2. I went through all of my lives, all of my continues, and okay, I died. And I was like, okay, I can't let it stop there. I'm going to try again. I switched to easy mode because easy mode gives you 8 lives instead of 2.
Mm.
And I honestly don't know what other differences there might be. I'm not sure if maybe it might be a little easier to kill hyenas, but I don't know. I know for sure that you have significantly more lives. This time I did so I managed to beat it. I had to look up how to do a couple of things because I couldn't remember. But yeah, so...
It's like forgetting how to make various potato dishes. Lacuna frittata. What a wonderful phrase.
Yes, you think that one's it? Did you get it?
I demand a small amount of credit for lacuna frittata. Come on.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. All right, I'll retire the other ones that I had in.
So yeah, The Lion King on Super Nintendo was a lot of BS, especially level 2. Level 2 is absolutely the worst. I don't know why they would... The ostrich part is terrible.
It's some of the worst platforming I've ever played, yeah.
Yeah, because like you're on an ostrich and you have to jump over a pink rhino. It's pink because the Can't Wait to Be King color palette got really wild, I guess. You have to jump over a pink rhino, and then you have to duck under some bird's nests. And then it's like, hey, by the way, you have to double jump at this part because there's a rhino and there's some bird's nests. But for some inexplicable reason, sometimes you do it and you hit your head on the tree, even though you can't hit your head on that any other time.
Yeah.
And you die instantly.
I had to save scum that part. It still took me dozens of attempts. And many of the times that I died, I literally had no idea why. That is not good design.
No, not at all.
So there's hard. let's be clear. There's hard, right? And then there's bad platforming. Mm-hmm. Because a game can be bad because it's just badly done, or it could just be difficult. So, for example, like the Star Wars action platformers from roughly that era, like Super Star Wars, Super Empire Strikes Back, those games were brutally difficult. But nonetheless, I had a sense of what was happening and why. And you may say, Mark, that's a really low bar. And I say, I agree with you. It is a very low bar. And it is not a bar that The Lion King manages to clear. Because much of the time, I don't understand what is hitting me, what's going on. There's no Stunlock involved. It's just badly done and badly communicated. On top of that, the jumping doesn't feel right. I think the overall platforming and the jumping and how much forward momentum you have, for example, when jumping from giraffe head to giraffe head, it just felt so arbitrary to me. There's another element where you're swinging back and forth on the tail of a rhino. And that kind of setup exists in many a platform. You're just swinging back and forth, and so you just jump and use the forward momentum. When I would have forward momentum and when I would lose forward momentum, I could not internalize it. Felt so arbitrary and clumsy and awkward.
Yep, that was the one of the pieces of, I don't know, muscle memory is not quite the right word, but that is one thing that I actually still retained from childhood. Was exactly how to do the swaying parts. And if I hadn't done that, I don't think I would have beat the game, honestly. Because, like, knowing when you're supposed to hold forward when you jump or not touch anything, or when you're supposed to jump backward, that is very important in this game. And I don't know how you're supposed to figure it out except by dying repeatedly.
This isn't, to be fair, a lazy cash grab on the part of the studio. So it was definitely a cash grab. I mean, many things are, but it is lavishly gorgeous. It is a technical marvel because it has very well rendered speech clips on a Super Nintendo game. And it's a joy to look at. Everything moves with, like, it was animated by Disney animators. And it's just that the gameplay is garbage. On top of that, it's not even just that I think it's clumsily done and the level design is bad. They deliberately made the level design worse. Apparently, I don't know too many of the details, but the runtime was too short. And so in order to, this was a trick that they did all the time back in the retro era. In order to pad the length, they took some of the platforming levels, among them, level 2, our personal favorite, and just made it more arbitrary and difficult. So as to make the game perceived to be more valuable. Because look, level 1's fine. Level 1's okay. It's a little bit of the Ikaruga problem. Level 1's okay. You know, you run around. I'm like, all right, this isn't bad. It looks great. The boss fight is a little arbitrary and doesn't feel very satisfying. But okay, fine. And then you get to level 2 and you just get, oh man, that ostrich. I swear, that ostrich is some sort of murderous psychopath.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely is.
And it buries these weird, silly, arbitrary jumps at the end of long sequences. And so, thank goodness for save scumming. I'll say that much.
I mentioned to one of my friends, like, oh my God, I beat the Lion King. And they're like, how many save states did you use? And I was like, oh my God, I forgot about save states.
And you have an emotional attachment to the source material, right?
I do, yes.
Because Lion King never really did it for me. I am not blind to the charms of Disney movies. I have very favorable childhood memories of the Robin Hood movie, for example. Had that taped on VHS. Watched that all the time. I really like Aladdin. And for what it's worth, the Aladdin Genesis game does hold up. Is a very good retro game. And is very popular in the Aladdin retro community and is really good. But The Lion King, as far as source material goes, never really had much for me. Like, if anything, I found the relatively well-done musical clips grating rather than enjoyable, in part because I had a friend whose daughter was obsessed with The Lion King, and so it was always on in the background whenever I was hanging out with him. And so I've heard enough of I Can't Wait to Be King for a Lifetime, and so now I have another reason to be traumatized by that audio loop. So thanks for that.
I was singing along to that, but with angry lyrics instead while I was playing.
Okay.
I can't repeat them on the podcast because they were very expletive filled, but.
All right. I think you should put together like a tight recorded version with your alternate lyrics. I think that would be wonderful. And again, there are good Disney games. I mean, I talked about Aladdin. I have very fond memories of Disney's Magical Quest starring Mickey Mouse for the Super Nintendo. It was a solid platformer. Mm-hmm. I don't have huge enthusiasm for Disney, but they made good games. They licensed good games to a variety of different companies. I mean, mostly Capcom, but others as well. And so I was completely unprepared for how clumsy and awkward and bad the gameplay was of The Lion King. I was still impressed by the visuals, though. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous game.
Beautiful game.
So this purely got by on the strength of nostalgia for you. And so this was a rude reawakening, right?
Yeah. I mean, I knew that I would be frustrated, but yeah, I can't.
You can't and you won't. Well, and the good news is I'm not going to make you. I simply found The Lion King very frustrating and unpleasant. And if you want to see a technical marvel on the Super Nintendo, it's worth loading up and playing level one, I guess, and then stop. For the love of all things good and holy, for your mental well-being, and for the prospect of having favorable views on The Lion King source property, especially I Can't Wait to Be King, put it away. You're done.
One more thing. The bonus levels. The one with Timon was fine, I guess. You just had to run around and collect bugs and not walk into a spider.
Right.
But the Pumbaa one was terrible. It was, there were parts that were objectively impossible. Because it just, I mean, I assume it's just random. But when there's two bugs falling on either side of the map and you need to be able to get both of them.
I don't know what to tell you, man.
Terrible.
So that's The Lion King. Not lazy, but... ooh, a very regrettable licensed property.
All right, we're going to take a quick break for some ads. We'll see you in a moment.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.
And we're back.
So we can move on to our feature game, which is Animal Well. Animal Well was released in May 2024, developed by Shared Memory and published by Limited Run Games. It's been released for PC, Nintendo Switch, and PlayStation 5. And it's a Metroidvania where you get to play this tiny little blob and explore a gorgeous pixel art labyrinth that's inhabited by loads of animals. Some of these animals are decoration. Some of them are friends? Question mark. And some of them are enemies. Dogs. Dogs are terrible and mean.
They're cruel.
They're so mean.
That is indeed an excellent summary of what's going on. I would summarize the entire plot of Animal Well as you are a blob chasing a squirrel. There is no context given, none offered, none needed, and you really are just a blob. I mean, we're not making this up. It just, I've seen games where you play as a potato that looked vaguely similar, but no, the blob in Animal Well is just a blob.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know why he's a blob or why.
I think he is saying way too much. Yeah. Yeah. If ever there was an opportunity, Caitlin, to use a gender neutral pronoun.
Yes.
First of all, I think they should be used generally. But secondly, in this case, especially. Whew.
Yeah.
That blob is a they at best.
Yep. At best. So, OK, I didn't get to play a ton of this, but I did play it for a few hours and I really enjoyed it. I collected a bubble wand. I collected a frisbee. I was delighted to find out that I could use the frisbee to distract dogs because they could catch it in their mouths and then they shake it and you can run by. So good. And generally, I was just really charmed by the really beautiful pixel art levels. That's not to say I wasn't frustrated because there's puzzles. There was a fish sewer pipe puzzle that got on my nerves just because I had to keep going from fish to fish to fish through different pipes, getting dropped back at the beginning unceremoniously. But yeah, that is what it is.
So let's talk a little bit about the aesthetic. This is a retro style pixelated aesthetic, and it is lavishly illustrated and animated. So just as an example, there are vines hanging from many ceiling, and if you jump past them, they will sway. Everything is beautifully animated. There's tall grass that will similarly animate. And I'm of two minds with respect to the overall aesthetics of Animal Well, because while I appreciate the visuals all told, I sometimes was a little bit confused by the overall visual design and visual language of Animal Well. That is because when you are doing platforming, and again, in The Lion King, I knew where I was supposed to jump at all times. I just would sometimes be confused as to sort of the hit detection, for lack of better terms. Animal Well was kind of the opposite. The actual core platforming is very tight. The blob just jumps. It's not even one of those things where you jump higher if you get a running start or jump higher if you hold the button down. No. You just hit the button. The blob does its blobby jump, and everything's very nice. There's a sense of appropriate sense of momentum, but not too much. You never feel like you're slipping around. But sometimes I just didn't know what a platform was.
Yeah, you jump because there's something in the foreground that looks like you can jump on it, and then you fall through it because it's just foreground decoration. That did happen to me a few times.
It could be a wall where you think there's no wall. There could be a platform that is just the kind of platform that will not block your movement, but you can jump on top of. Sometimes it's a pillar, sometimes it's not. And so just navigating through the screen was sometimes a bit obnoxious. And sometimes I'm willing to give a game a pass, but there's a big reason why I'm not willing to give Animal Well a pass is because the designer, Billy Basso, knew what he was doing. Because he uses and exploits that visual ambiguity to hide secret rooms. And so he was fully aware that there were these bits where you don't know if it's a wall or not. And he's like, ooh, I'll hide a room behind that not wall. It's like, no, Billy. You were onto something. You were close to realizing it. You just learned the wrong lesson. I'm very glad to hear that I was not the only one with that impression.
Yeah, especially... I mean, there was one part in particular where I was traversing across this part of the level where it was just all water on the bottom. So when you fall in the water, you immediately get teleported back to the last time you were on solid ground, which sometimes could be quite far away. So I'm doing this, and I thought that I had a safe jump to make because it looked like it was a surface. So I did a little running jump over there, and I fell right through it into the water. I was like, "Ah!" Yeah, I mean, I learned my lesson. I didn't do it a second time.
Right.
There were a few times in Animal Well where I got shoved pretty far back because the last time I'd saved had been quite a ways earlier. And that was a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of some of our complaints of Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. There's always going to be backtracking in Metroidvanias. It is what it is. And frankly, that's where some of the incredibly lush backgrounds kind of redeem themselves because it's very pretty to look at all the lighting effects. And lo-fi lighting effects can be very effective. It doesn't have to be like ray tracing or anything. Just animate it properly and it'll get you a long way. But if you miss a narrow jump and then have to go through another five screens to get back to where you were, that's bad enough. When you miss the jump because it turns out the thing was never a platform to begin with, well now, that's ground for hurling a controller through the wall.
Yeah. In this case, too, there were these switches that I had to hit on the way to this location that would toggle walls on and off. Every now and then, I would get teleported back. The wall would be blocking me from being able to proceed, and I had to climb back up to the switch, and that was very annoying. But that's okay.
Again, very much like Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, more save points would have been a good idea. Because there are some puzzles, seldom. Most of the time, puzzles are contained within a single screen. But sometimes a switch in one screen will affect something that happens a couple screens over. It's used judiciously. I don't find it overly confusing. But in those cases, I do get a little confused when I say die, because a dog has been quote-unquote, playing with me too much, and I don't know what the status of the switch is, and so I'm kind of midway through the puzzle, and I don't know what the state of play is. More frequent save states at least would have obviated that and reduced some of the backtracking. You use a telephone you pick up a telephone and you call things. Yep. By the way, for our younger listeners, a telephone is kind of like a phone, but imagine it 7 times bigger and with physical buttons instead of just a screen. Oh, and there's no screen.
Very sad.
What did you think on the topic, while we're talking about these fundamentals of some of the technical elements of a Metroidvania or a platformer, what did you make of the map?
I was a little confused with respect to the map because I Googled something at one point and someone was talking about the map as if it were helpful. And I didn't see it at all.
I thought the map was simultaneously very good and very bad. It was simultaneously, it was good in that I thought it was very easy to just give a quick scan of the nearby rooms and mm-hmm. see if there were horizons that I'd yet to explore. You know, yes. entrances that I hadn't gone through. Sometimes it would even reveal where a secret location was because there'd just be a gap in the walls the way that it was drawn. So it was pretty good as far as Metroidvanias go. Here's a place you might want to backtrack to see if this is a thing you can get past now, because now you've got the disc, not a Frisbee, Caitlin. We might get sued.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Or something else. It was bad in the sense that I could remember distinctly what a room was. I could remember the salient mm-hmm. visual feature, like this is the room where the fish are blowing bubbles, or this is the room with the tubes underneath where the Scotty dog is going to come chase me, or what have you. And I'd be yeah. completely unable to match that with its representation in the map. So as a tool for telling me where to try next, maybe in a somewhat random way, it was good. In a way to remember specific locations and landmarks, I thought it was pretty poor.
I completely agree with you. Oh man, you mentioned the Scotty dog and it gave me a brief flashback to the dachshund.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant, the dachshund. My apologies, wrong type of dog.
That dog jump scared me because I jumped in. All the other dogs you can hide from when you go through a blob shape or a blob sized hole, but not this dog. This dog is like a snake, and that was horrifying.
I have never known true terror like being chased through a narrow tunnel by the head of an ostrich who wanted to bite me.
Oh no, that one didn't happen to me.
That was
I didn't get there yet.
It's like the dachshund, but on a different level. And
oh no,
I'm a little confused as to the overall conceit of what's going on, because as you say, some of the animals are broadly friendly. There are these even just in the same class of animals, some of them are incredibly murderous and some of them are just strictly helpful. Like even amongst rodents, it really depends mm-hmm. on the kind of rodent. And you learn these things, you figure it out. It's not like it's totally mysterious, but yeah. This is one of my substantive criticisms of Animal Well, because I think after this, we should talk about the puzzles for a bit.
Okay.
But I found Animal Well strangely unengaging in a number of ways, because I was appreciating the physical beauty. I was even appreciating the puzzles, but I felt like I couldn't really play it for more than about 20 to 30 minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. And I eventually realized why I think that is. That's because I think that Animal Well is very cute, but it's soulless. I realize that may sound terribly dismissive, but there's all these appealing visual elements. The animals are lovingly rendered, and they're very, very nice to look at, and the animation's great, and the environment is interesting looking, even when it's driving me crazy because it's messing up my platforming. But because I didn't understand any of the world's logic, and I couldn't identify what the character was trying to do, and the animal behaviors were sometimes arbitrary or sometimes they were just window dressing, it just looked like a whole bunch of pretty stuff arranged for no overall purpose. And as we've said before, I don't need every game to have a good story for me to get attached to anything going on. But I just felt that ultimately a lot of the appealing elements of Animal Well weren't achieving their full effect, because it was all just tossed together in a world that didn't make sense to me. And so I didn't feel a sense of wonder. I more often felt a sense of, huh, which is not necessarily a problem, but in order to really suck me in, I think the world could have been more coherent, cohesive, and possibly even just the vaguest gesture towards narrative. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. So I wouldn't say that I felt the same, because I definitely did have a sense of wonder at times in this game. But I do agree that I think having, just even knowing like what my little blob is trying to do other than apparently collect eggs, because you definitely collect a whole lot of eggs.
Yes.
That would have been really helpful.
I agree. So let's talk a little bit about the puzzles. What did you think of the puzzles? You said at one point you found them frustrating.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's the one puzzle with the fish that were stuck in the pipes, and you can, you know, if you use your bubble wand to make a bubble, the fish will suck it in, and then you can jump into the bubble and the fish will eat you and you'll go through the sewer system, through the pipes. I don't know. Does it poop you out? I didn't really think about that too much until just now. You go through the pipes, you pop out somewhere else, and it basically just created somewhat of a maze. At first, I was like, oh, this poor fish is stuck in a pipe. Do I need to find a way to help it? No, you use the fish. You use the stuck fish in order to get somewhere you want. So, yeah, I don't know. I wasn't a huge fan of the stuck fish puzzle.
Well, again, there's no logic to the world. There's not even a sort of fairy tale pretext. Like we don't know. There's a whole bunch of animals that are just chilling out. Like these could be capybara taking a bath in the background, or these could be fish blowing bubbles that are relevant for a jumping puzzle, or these could be fish stuck in a pipe, or this could be a lizard that's trying to eat you for reasons passing understanding. Like they're just tossed about everywhere. So it ends up being a visual touchstone rather than a thematic element, right? And overall, the puzzles were very sort of narrow in scope, but I personally appreciated that. Like I said before, generally speaking, if there's a locked door, you might need to find a key somewhere randomly and then go backtrack to find the locked door or find whatever. But very often, the most frequent form of puzzle was there's this screen, and because it's all retro style and very lo-fi, a single screen is very big, or at least it can be. And there are switches you need to hit. That is the overwhelming majority of the puzzles in Animal Well. And they then design the level such that sometimes you even need to approach the screen from a different screen, but it's all centered around this locus point, so you can kind of understand what it is. And you have to leverage your movement abilities, which start out as just being able to jump, but then you get new items that let you move in new ways. And that's the overall conceit. And frankly, it was more or less ideally pitched at my level. Because unlike the puzzles in Inscription, say, where you have to wrap around what is going on in the first place. See, Inscription, everything is tied together under a sort of thematic cohesion, whereby it makes a kind of sense. The universe has a kind of logic to it, and I understand what's going on, even though I don't know the details, and it's all very horror-based and unsettling, but nonetheless, it kind of sort of makes sense. Animal, well, it doesn't make sense, but nonetheless, it's at the granular detail level where Mark is able to be like, oh, this door has two lights above it, and here are two yellow switches on this floor. Got it.
Yes. So some of the puzzles I loved. Like, I mean, I'm a simple girl. You give me a puzzle where there's something shooting water, and we need to make it bounce off stuff to fall into a specific spot. I am so there. I loved those puzzles. They were really fun for me for whatever reason. Yeah, I don't know. Just water puzzles are fun.
And there's a small amount of joy of discovery, I have to say, reminiscent to a certain extent of The Legend of Zelda, the Minish Cap, where you find a new application for the Gust Jar, for example, you know, discovering how the disc works. And I discovered a different application of the disc that delighted me. The whole getting a disc to distract the dog, that was the immediate association I had. But then there was another thing you could do with it that kind of delighted me, but I'm not going to spoil it. And sure enough, just as this is one of those rare instances where I actually think it's good, I got the little notification that I got a Steam achievement, and I'm like, yay! Most of the time I find it distracting, but so I was like, I did figure something out. Yay!
And I had the same exact reaction to that same achievement.
Good stuff. I don't often have that reaction to puzzles, but there's something about Metroidvanias. Like, give me a good Metroidvania, and that tends to be the kind of environmental puzzling that I can get behind. Like, I had some of the same reaction to some of the stuff going on in Metroid, for what it's worth. And so, even though, again, the world didn't really have any kind of internal logic, I liked how stripped down and focused the puzzle solving was in a platforming way, and so most of them pleased me.
All right, so that was Animal Well. Now we can move on to shameless hyping of upcoming titles, aka Shout. Mark, what are you going to shout out for us today?
I would like to talk about a game that's been in early access for 6 years, Caitlin, which is entirely unreasonable.
6 years.
The early access page says that they expect it will be a few months until full release. But nonetheless, I'm sufficiently intrigued by this, and especially since my recent failure to appreciate Undertale. The game is called The Void Reigns Upon Her Heart. And this is a shoot 'em up game about mental health and depression and relationships, and I am all for it. I love the overall conceit. It is literally the heart of an individual trying to blast monsters with love and trying to navigate various emotional problems and difficulties and challenges. I love shoot 'em up games. I love indie shoot 'em ups, and I love indie shoot 'em ups that play around with the basic formula. And that was one of the things that I found consistently, reliably interesting in Undertale, the way they used shoot 'em up mechanisms in some contexts to represent various combat and even non-combat encounters that they mm-hmm. had. And I just wish that this would have a full release. I want it to be a grown-up game. I want it to be for real grown-ups in the real life world of actual released things, rather than kind of sort of almost give me an interest-free loan kind of sort of situation. And so this is me wanting very much for there to be a 1.0 or even more of The Void Reigns Upon Her Heart.
Yeah, this game looks pretty neat. It's wild to me that it's been in early access for as long as it has been. I'm a little curious, like, you know, what they still want in order for there to be a 1.0, but we'll see.
So in the defense of the developer, who goes by the name Vieral Games, it is a single person. So
okay,
I'm not going to give them too much of a hard time for being in early access. It's just one individual. Not everyone can be expected to match the output of Concerned Ape. After all, Concerned Ape is sitting on a huge mountain of money.
And yes.
not to apply any degree of corruption or anything. It's just, you know, they're in a slightly different position. And so I'm understanding. I know why it's taken this long. I'm just a little impatient.
That's fair.
Caitlin, what are you looking forward to?
Okay, so we had The Lion King and we had Animal Well. So I specifically looked for a animal-themed game. And the game that I found was Barcore. It's going to be released in 2025 by Varsov Game Studios. And it's an action platformer where you play a secret agent dog. And you fight against evil.
I get it now. Barcore. Yes, I've heard of this.
Yes. So the concept, I think, looks incredible. So I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye out for it. I watched their trailer on their Steam page, and it just looks fun. So
here's an important question, though. In Barcore, will you be able to pet the dog?
I don't know. I mean, because you are the dog.
You are the parkour action stealth agent dog.
Yeah.
Hence Barcore. Will you be able to pet the... Possibly not.
Maybe another dog. Maybe you can pet a different dog.
I don't know if that... anyway, we'll have to see.
Don't know if that qualifies.
We'll have to see.
We will. It's very important that Thunder knows that he or she is a very good dog.
And with that, conclusion of the animal trifecta, we are going to call it a day here. All My Best Friends Are Digital. Thank you very, very much for joining us. We can assure you, dear listeners, that you are all very, very good listeners. And we hope to see you again soon.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in touch, you can reach us at allmybestfriendsaredigital@gmail.com. Hope to see you again soon.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.